Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me today for another episode here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. Now, again, as I say my morning greetings, I want to thank my Heavenly Father for allowing me the ability to wake up this morning to see another day. And I also am very grateful for the loyal listeners that I have on my show that have been listening as I have been on this journey to provide information to other individuals to basically kind of break the taboo of therapy, talk about topics and things that interest people all over the world. And I also want to say for those individuals that contacted me in South Africa, I did learn that you guys are 9 hours ahead of me. So I hope that you are on, listening. I don't know if you're going to call in because that could be a very expensive phone call. But I do appreciate you listening over there. Now, I want to join my guest. Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great.
Hello. Okay, thank you for joining me. Okay, so today's topic has to do with sexual assault and rape in the workplace, including the military. Now, I wanted to talk about this topic for a lot of different reasons, and one being that as we may be aware, not aware, individuals are being sexually assaulted all over the world. And it's one of those things when we talk about sexual assault, some individuals may minimize it, some individuals may try to hide it, and some individuals just really don't know what to do. And I want to reach out to everyone and all of the listeners and audience because, as I mentioned earlier, some of you may have been assaulted and some of you may have or be in a relationship with others that have been sexually assaulted, don't know what to do, don't know how to handle it, don't know the signs or the symptoms or things of that nature. Some individuals have been told different things. So I want to introduce my caller and my guest, basically. So, how are you doing today, Catherine?
I'm great. I'm glad to be talking to you. This is an important topic.
Yes, it is. Tell the listeners who you are and what you do.
I am a licensed counselor in Arlington, Texas, and I work with post-traumatic stress. I work with civilians, but my specialty is military and first responders. And so I work with all kinds of trauma and help people through the way it affects them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is why this topic is so important, because, as we know, sexual assault affects the many lives of individuals directly and indirectly. It is a crime that spans age, sexual orientation, religion, and gender, and affects people of all socioeconomic backgrounds and educational levels. So some individuals mm-hmm. may say, well, where I live or because I have a degree, I'm exempt. Nobody is exempt. It
right.
is estimated that 1 in 5 and 1 in 71 men are raped in the USA. And a lot of individuals think a man cannot be raped, and that is not true. There is more than 23.6 million survivors, meaning that that is an estimate of how many individuals have basically had this happen to them. Sexual assault is any type of sexual contact or behavior that occurs without the explicit consent of the recipient. This can be sexual assault in regards to sexual activities as forced sexual intercourse, forcible sodomy, child molestation, incest, fondling, and attempted rape or forcible rape. Like I said, it affects men as well as women, adults, teens, and children. All have been subject to being a victim of an assault. The incident can occur in your home, schools, community, workplace, including the military. Now, one of the things I want you guys to know is sometimes the assault, as we think, is normally, we always think it's committed by strangers. But that is sometimes. Most often, it is committed by someone that the person may know. Sexual violence is always wrong. And the reason why we're on the line today is because the individuals that have been sexually abused may suffer serious health problems and develop mental health symptoms. That is what we're going to talk about today. So I'm going to bring you in as we talk about this, because today's topic is to basically end the silence and heal the wounds. So, Jess, what do you think about that when we talk about this topic? Because we're going to break it down to the different areas of assault, but let's talk about the trauma that some individuals experience.
Mm-hmm. Are you speaking specifically to the types of trauma, or you just want to know overall what it does to a person?
What it do to a person, because a lot of times individuals may have experienced it and don't even know why they're feeling the way that they're feeling.
Yes. Yeah, so where do I start? Well, there's different areas. It can affect you. Most people don't know this. It can affect you physically. Obviously, it can affect you emotionally. It can affect relationships and bonding, trust, ability to focus, to function overall in the world. So depending on age and type of trauma a little bit, but for the most part, what I see with sexual assault are what we call the general symptoms of post-traumatic stress, what we call hypervigilance, always looking for a threat. There may be what we call stuck points, beliefs like I'm not worth loving, I'm broken, all men are dangerous, it was my fault, things like that. It can cause depression and anxiety, difficulty. For example, I see a lot of people who were traumatized as children that have difficulty in relationships as adults, and they very often do not, they don't see the connection until we make the connection. They don't understand that an assault, when you're developing and learning how to have relationships and attachments, can really, really cause problems. They may sabotage their relationships and not realize they're doing that. They may have a string of hollow relationships because they don't want to bond. They may be what a lot of people term clingy and fall into relationships too deep, too fast. So it can really, really affect every area of your life in pretty deep ways.
So since you started there, let's start with the one first, child molestation. A lot of times, even though we know that child molestation and kids are being sexually assaulted by family members, they could be assaulted by strangers, neighbors, things of that nature, and a lot of parents don't know how to look for the signs and symptoms of if their child has been sexually assaulted or molested. Now, when we start looking at the signs and the symptoms, sometimes sometimes kids may come up to us and say, you know, someone did something to me. And sometimes they may not. And one of the things that I see, because I am a licensed therapist, and I do work with children who have been assaulted or molested and the trauma that they have endured. But the thing that I see the most is a lot of times kids will, if you tell them, go give Uncle So-and-so a kiss, and the child may be afraid to go, or they'll tell you, I don't want to go back over Daddy's house, or I don't want to go over Mommy's house, or things of that nature. And when you see that, that's a sign. Sometimes you'll find that children may wet the bed. And I'm not saying that wetting the bed is a dead giveaway for child sex abuse or sexual molestation, but it is an indicator. And another thing that we may see is the nightmares. You know, your child may be having nightmares or things of that nature, and they basically can engage in other sexual activities with other children, you know, whether either by pressuring them or you see sometimes indecent exposure, you know. So there's a lot of different things that can occur in a variety of settings for children as well as adults, where it could be in the home, in the school, or places of that nature. But when kids start experiencing that, and then another thing is with the sexual abuse and dealing with child molestation is the incest, which we're going to go into the incest because that one is another topic. Now,
that's a big one.
Do you normally work? It is a big one. But in your practice, do you normally work with children that have been?
Did recently in my agency job. Now that I'm in private practice, I mostly see adults. But I have experience with that. Mm-hmm. I worked with CPS for several years.
Mm-hmm. And
so
you know,
we see that
because I was watching the movie because every time I do my show, I talk about some of the movies that I see. And I saw the movie Split. And when I was watching the movie Split, I couldn't understand the connection between the young girl and the gentleman who had the multiple personalities. But the one thing they had in common was childhood trauma. And the young girl had been molested by her uncle. And she never told her father, never told anyone. But when it came towards the end of the movie, it showed that the young girl, they had her holding a gun and pointing a gun at her uncle after her father's funeral, which was very interesting. Because they have what they call, it says, a global prevalence of child sexual abuse has been estimated at 19.7% for females and 7.9% for males. And most sexual abuse offenders are acquainted with the victim. Approximately 30% of relatives of the child, most often brothers, fathers, uncles, or cousins, and around 60% are other acquaintances, are such as friends of the family, babysitters, or neighbors. Strangers are the offenders in approximately only 10% of sexual abuse cases, and most child sexual abuse is committed by men, and studies found on female child molesters show that women commit 14 to 40% of offense against boys and 6% of offense reported against girls. And I also find that information to be interesting because even with my work with CPS, when a female child has been touched, fondled, groped, or penetrated by another female, a lot of times it seems like CPS kind of turns a blinder on that because it seems like they don't believe that females
yes.
can rape other females.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about sexual abuse because it's so taboo. We don't talk about it. And because it's very hard to prove. It's very, very hard to prove. People don't report right away. It's not generally reported where you can do a rape kit and a physical exam. And so a lot of it is speculation. People don't think that men can be raped. I mean, there's so many misperceptions about sexual assault. And really, anytime somebody makes an outcry, you have to take it seriously, despite what you think about the circumstances. Mm-hmm.
That is true. And see, and part of the reason why we're doing this show, too, is because left untreated, it can cause a whole lot of damage. And the effects of child sexual abuse can include depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, and the way that they engage in other relationships, like you said, they can take that victimization into their adulthood. It can be physical injury to the child, amongst other problems, and sometimes suicide, because the child can be in so much pain because they don't know what to do, and also substance abuse. Alcohol addiction is high, and prostitution. Now, let's piggyback, because I know we have very little time to cover some of these topics, but going from child molestation to incest, what is your input in regards to incest?
Oh, man. I actually saw a ton of incest when I was working with CPS. I was surprised and horrified. It seems to be more prevalent in some cultures than others. I did notice in the African American and Hispanic communities, for some reason, it was more culturally accepted. I don't have enough cultural education to know why, so I can't speak to that. It was very often multi-generational, meaning if I had a person that had experienced incest, it went back two or three generations because there were inappropriate boundaries in the family. And it was sort of normalized for those people. And it's just so pervasive.
It is. And, you know, me being of African-American descent, it's interesting because I used to hear little taboo stories in my family, and they used to call it kissing cousins. And the sad part about it, a lot of times when we talk about incest, is sometimes you can be related to people, and in our culture, sometimes we don't know all of our family members.
Right.
So we have to be real careful, and you know, and don't be sneaking around, and you messing with somebody around the corner, you don't know who that might be. I remember one time when I was a kid, there was a gentleman that used to go to middle school with me, and he had a crush on me. And my mother saw that kid one day. And my mother was like, you know, what's that little boy's name? I said, I told her what his name was. She said, that might be your father's child. And it was sad because what if I would have dated him or something like that and didn't even know? Now, incest, for those that don't know, is sexual activity between family members or close relatives. This typically includes sexual activity between people of the same blood relation, and sometimes those related by what they call individuals of the same household, step families, or those related by adoption or marriage. And see, sometimes people think, well, if it's my adopted sister, then it's no big deal. Or if it's my step so-and-so. And even when, like the Brady Bunch, that was another one. When we would watch the story of the Brady Bunch, there were speculations in regards to that. So basically, they are members of the same clan or lineage. Now, the incest taboo has been one of the most widespread of all cultural taboos present and in many past societies because modern societies have laws regarding incest or social restrictions on closely congenuous marriages. In societies where it is illegal, consensual adult incest is seen by some as a victimless crime. When I was doing my research, I found an article of a lady who married her son. And it made me kind of wonder, what the heck was going on with that? You know, me being nosy, I would have been curious as to, did he look like his father? Did she, was she dumped by the father? And then all of a sudden developed this affair with her son? But it's like, that is something that is going on. And some individuals don't think it's nothing wrong with it. But I remember my mother used to say, and I know that we can't say mentally retardation because we now use the term borderline intellectual functioning. But when the DNA is that close, my mother used to always say that there was a strong possibility something could be wrong with that child.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's true because I'm not a doctor, but by that same token, when those genes are that close, what have you seen or heard in regards to in your line of work as a therapist?
Well, a couple of things. I want to go back a second. I want to speak to something very specific about incest that I've seen. It really, really affects parenting by the person who was sexually assaulted for the next generation. You see a lot of paranoia of children being around other people. The children aren't really allowed to play away from their parents. There's a lot of trouble letting go. And that seems to be very specific to incest. And there's also a very specific power dynamic when there's a parent-child or authority figure-child assault like that.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, as far as the genetics, again, I'm not a physician either, but my father is. And I've seen some of the children that would come in as products of incest and it wasn't good. They'd have, you know, malformed organs. They may have lower intellectual functioning. They may have, you know, trouble focusing, or there was a lot of developmental delays, things like that, because the genes are so closely linked. It can get confusing, especially in today's day and age, because of the way family dynamics have changed. We don't often just have one nuclear family, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it can get very confusing, and it can be, I think sometimes people are confusing one feeling for a different feeling. I have seen a story, I don't know if it's the same one, of a mother who married her son. She was of Mexican descent. And in that situation, the father had run off. The mother and son were separated, and she didn't raise him. And they reunited later. And because of his resemblance to his father, and he was an adult and she didn't raise him, they had justified it in a lot of ways. And so, you know, there's different kinds of love. There's the love for a mother and a son that is very strong, that can sometimes feel like romantic love, and they're not the same thing, but if you're not thinking clearly, they can be mistaken for such. So it's a very complex area, that's for sure.
Wow. You know, I'm looking it up right now, and it says mother and son pled guilty to incest. So
right.
they were actually charged, and it mm-hmm. said that, and are told to stay apart, but vow to stay together. And
yep.
this was actually Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. So we're
oh,
not
wow.
even talking about something that happened years and years and years ago. This is just the other day. And the mother is 37 and the son is 20. And they were found to be committing incest after a neighbor in New Mexico reported them to the police. And they're due to face trial, but pled guilty at the final hour after accepting a plea deal for 3 years probation with 18 months supervised. And they were also told to stay apart for 18 months. And the mother also was told to stay away from her 9 other children. The mother mm. and son couple decided to go public with their affair last year in order to raise awareness of genetic sexual attraction, which is called GSA, and make it mm-hmm. legal for them to have sexual relationships. Now, that, wow, she was 16 years old when she gave him up for adoption.
Right.
And that's what happened. And then they, you know, did reconnect. So here we have, again, individuals trying to make things a law that they, that was their way of raising awareness by letting people know, well, love is love. But then that opens up a whole nother can of issues, especially if we're mm-hmm. looking at the fact of incest and breeding and a collection of genetic disorders.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of blows
so
your mind, doesn't it?
It does. It just, I'm like, wow, because I have a 32-year-old son, and I'm like, wow, you know, that mm-hmm. right there. But then what do you do if you are, say, a cousin, a relative, and you fell in love and you married? What do you do? Even though I know that some marriages can be annulled in those situations, but then again, it boils down to, do you just say, well, I don't want to have any children? So how is one
right.
handle those type of situations?
Yeah, that's a really personal solution. So one thing with regards to genetics, we hear about first cousin, second cousin, third cousin. With respect to what you're asking, that's actually important because the further removed a person is from your initial genetic line, the less likely there is to be genetic deformities. Which mm-hmm. means if you married a guy and you found out he was his seventh cousin, if he was mm-hmm. your seventh cousin, that's going to be less of a risk than if he was your father's brother's son, your first cousin. So mm-hmm. level of removal also plays a role. So depending on the circumstances, yeah, it's really going to affect your decision. But there's a bigger issue here, and it's something that I preach throughout all of my treating trauma, and that's boundaries. Usually when mm-hmm. when something like incest, that's a signal of bad boundaries and possibly misinterpreting feelings for something they're not, and that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I was thinking of this and I thought about my son, it kind of reminded me of a situation. I remember when I was pregnant with my son, and people used to think that my son's father and I, because we favored a lot, they used to call us sisters and brothers, which we weren't. But I was pregnant, gosh, I think I was about maybe 7 or 8 months pregnant with my son. And I remember my son's father's family, they had family coming to visit. And when the guy came in and my son's father introduced me to his cousin, I looked at the man, and I remembered him. And I told him, I said, you my uncle. He looked at me like, what? I said, you was married to my auntie. I said, the last time I saw you, I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And he just stared at me like, for real? And I knew his name and everything, but I never knew that his cousin had married my auntie when I was
right.
a kid because he had moved away. And they was just in town visiting. And so he decided to tell me, my cousin is in town. I want you to meet my cousin. And found out that his cousin was actually once married to my auntie.
Wow.
So, I mean, those type of situations, you'd be like, oh, my God, and like I said, I know I had to be at least 7 or 8 months pregnant at the time when I got introduced to him and just remembered him as a kid. And he didn't even know who I was. So if he would have saw me walking down the street, he wouldn't even have recognized me because he hadn't seen me in so long. So I have, my son has cousins that are cousins by me and the same cousin with his father.
So yeah, I'm I think we're going to panic a lot of listeners. We're not going
to. You know what? Because I just thought about that. I'm like, oh, Lord, I remember that happening to me. You know,
well, and
I want to have some incest.
Yeah. Well, you speak to an important point, and this is part of why we see incest so much in specific cultures, as I'm sure you know better than I. There are a lot of scholarly articles on parental abandonment in the African American community. And that definitely affects knowing your family line and having half brothers and half sisters and all of that.
Well,
and it's
a
big problem.
Correct. There used to be a joke, and they used to say, if you want to know, or if you want to go meet your next husband, either you go to a funeral, a family reunion, or a wedding. And I used to be
goodness.
That is sick. You know, that's where you go find your next husband. Go to the family reunion. You go meet your next husband. So, you know, there is a lot of things, a lot of stuff that, you know, people have said and things of that nature. Now, let's change the topic again because we first talked about in regards to child abuse or child sexual abuse, and we went to incest. Let's talk about just actually take a person down being assaulted. Now, we know that, like I said, no one deserves to be sexually assaulted. And when we talk about sexual assault, it covers a wide range of things because some individuals don't realize that it could be, you know, fondling someone, sexually harassing someone by either pictures or, you know, words or things of that nature to where you feel violated. Then we have the ultimate when you're talking about forcefully sexually penetrating someone or sodomy rape. Now, this can happen in your home. It can happen happen to individuals when they may have been leaving, you know, nightclubs, things of that nature. It has been very prevalent on college campuses. So I also want to say that because a lot of individuals don't realize when individuals are in school how individuals can be sexually assaulted even when they are trying to better and improve their education. So that's a whole nother issue. And in the workplace. But we're going to kind of leave the workplace kind of the last of our segment and the military because that has been a big thing. Now, my question to you, because my daughter asked me, Mom, what do you think happened to those girls that are missing in D.C.? I said, you know what? They may have been kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and human trafficking. Because human trafficking also plays a part in this because that is another thing. Even when I woke up this morning and I turned on the news, I saw in San Diego County, 3 individuals were arrested for human trafficking as a young lady was kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and was able to get away, but it was human trafficking. Now, let's talk a little bit about just the sexual assaults because a lot of times, and this is what bothers me the most, is as a therapist, I hear and I've seen and I've known individuals that have been assaulted and they try to hide it. They try they don't want to talk about it. And part of it is because, like you said, the shame, the blame, the embarrassment, you know, they may have been told that if you tell someone, nobody's going to believe you. So I want to say that is a lie. And some individuals have been sexually assaulted, let it be a one-time event, or it could have happened numerous times. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think they're all valid reasons. I think there's another reason that wasn't listed, and that is that I know people that when they finally come to therapy, they're terrified because they think that in order to treat the problem, they have to go into intense detail, which we actually try to avoid because we feel like it re-traumatizes them. So basically, they don't want to talk about it because they're afraid everybody's going to say, well, how did he touch you? Where did he touch you? You know, what did she say? That's not necessarily the case. But, I mean, it is so hard to talk about these things. And part of that is, again, I'm going back to the physical, your body thinks you're still there. So when these people are talking about it, they're feeling it again. They might be seeing it running like a film in their head. It's a lot more than talking about it. And it's so, so hard on them. And self-blame and shame is probably the biggest thing with sexual assault because it is so taboo. And you do see a lot of victim blaming. Well, what were you wearing? Well, why were you there at that time of day? And so I think, yeah, there's a lot of fear of they're going to talk about my responsibility in it.
But did you know that just in the United States alone, 1 in 6 women reported experiencing rape or committed attempted rape at some time in their life? 1 out of 6. And especially famous, we what had Oprah Winfrey, we had what Gabrielle Union, we had quite a few actresses and very influential people that have been sexually assaulted. Now, rape is sex you don't agree to, including forcing a body part or an object into your vagina or rectum or mouth. So with 1 out of 6 women, that's a lot. Now, sexual assault or abuse is any type of sexual activity that a person finds not agreeing to. And it's also touching your body or making you touch someone else's. We already said the incest. Someone watching or photographing you in sexual situations. And someone exposing his or her body onto you. Now, sometimes sexual violence is committed again by strangers, but most often it's somebody you know again, including a date or an intimate partner, like a husband, ex-husband, or boyfriend. And we're going to get back to that. But sexual violence is always wrong. And a person who is sexually abused does not ever cause the attack, so we want them to know that. And we also have to keep in mind that there are times when a person is not able to agree to sex, such as if the person is drunk, if the individual has been drugged with a date rape drug, or if they're underage. So a lot of times, because I just took a law and ethics class yesterday, so I'm going to give a shout-out to Jerry Grossman because it was a very interesting class. But one of the things that, you know, I learned was the age of consent. A lot of times people get that confused because they'll say, well, she knew what she was doing or he knew why he was there or whatever the case may be. No means no. Now, another thing that's taboo, individuals got to realize that just because you're married to someone doesn't mean that you have the right to sexually assault them. Because a lot of times when you're talking about your husband, your ex-husband, or your boyfriend or intimate partner, date rape is something else that just, you know, became public because individuals didn't believe that that could happen, but it can. But it's hard for a woman, a wife, to go and say, my husband did this to me or my boyfriend did this to me, because that was someone you thought you could trust. Again, going back to movies, for Colored Girls, Tyler Perry did a movie. And one of the things and was interesting about that show was all of those women had experienced some type of sexual trauma. And one of the young ladies, she was a dance teacher, and she met this guy, and he was showered with flowers, and she invited him over to his house, and he sexually assaulted her. And I was like, wow. Now, what is your take on that in regards to just the date rape and, you know, being sexually assaulted by your husband and your boyfriend and things of that nature?
I think being sexually assaulted in a relationship sort of harkens back to when marriage and relationships were sort of a form of ownership, you know, when there was dowries and things like that and you know, the dynamics of the genders. And we still have some of that programming. And the laws have only recently caught up, and some of them still haven't. That, you know, when you're in a relationship, it doesn't give you all rights. You don't get to
force sex on someone when they don't feel like it, or because you're trying to make up from a fight, or whatever your aim is. You don't get to do that. That's another person's body. I think as far as date rape, I think the date rape is what's really confusing at college campuses, because it's a time of exploration, and there are drugs involved, and there's alcohol involved, and there's parties, and learning your limits and learning your tolerances, and it can all be really confusing. And I think there's another issue with that, that a lot of people get into a situation where initially there's consent, and then they say, no, I've changed my mind. And then the other person says, no, you can't do that. And then it turns into something else. And I think that is probably the scariest thing for our college kids, because it's hard to know where the lines are sometimes. And I think that's where they're getting into trouble.
You know, it's interesting you said that, because I remember back in the day when we was the Mike Tyson fans, and when Mike Tyson was accused of rape, and that was one of the big issues, was the fact that, you know, the lady had got into the limousine with them, and, you know, she may have been fair game in the beginning. And when she said no, he didn't know how to accept no. And that was a problem. And he was found guilty, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I don't remember all the details of his trial, but that was an issue. And even with our president, that's been an issue too. And we got Bill Cosby.
Right.
We have all of these individuals, like, they don't believe that no means no. So, and that is becoming a problem. Now, we have 23 minutes left on the air, but I want to say this before we transition over to sex in the workplace and sex in the military, because that's a lot of information. But if in regards to just the child abuse and the sexual assault, one of the things is getting help for sexual assault. Take these steps right away if you've been assaulted. First of all, if you find yourself in a situation that you feel uncomfortable, get away and find a safe place as fast as you can. Call 911. Call someone you trust or hotline, such as the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 800-656-HOPE. And that is 800-656-4673. Protect the evidence. Do not clean any part of your body or comb your hair. Do not change your clothes. Try not to touch anything at the crime scene. Go to the nearest hospital emergency room right away. You need to be examined and treated for your injuries, because you may not know what your injuries are at the time. Ask to be screened for a sexually transmitted infection from the emergency room. And now they have what's called, if you are a female, the morning after pill. Discuss filing a police report. And if you're not sure whether you want to file a report, ask the hospital staff if they can collect evidence without filing a report. And after the sexual assault, you may need a lot of emotional support, because every woman and man responds differently. But reactions can include feeling terribly shocked, confused, and afraid. And for some, they may experience denial or feeling emotionally numb. Whether your experiences are, you have to reach out to other people who care about you and can get you help from a mental health professional. The hospital usually can put you in touch with a counselor or support group. I remember when I first started my educational career, I did some volunteer work for the Women's Resource Center in Oceanside, and I signed up for the sexual assault response team. And I remember they told me, well, Jeanette, you know, we don't get any calls, or nobody ever called. Lord, I commend those individuals, because my first day, I was getting so many phone calls and going to the hospitals and just going through that procedure as an advocate is an experience that you never know how you can make a difference in somebody's life. So even if you have been a victim or a survivor, one of the things is also giving back and reaching out to others to help them get through this, because there's no need to be stuck. There's no need to continue to feel numb. And we're going to go into also individuals that are in relationships with individuals who have been molested, victims of incest or rape, because it's hard for other individuals to understand the behavior of that individual, especially if it's been untreated for years. So, are you ready to transition? My mouth
I am if you are.
I'm talking so much.
Right.
You know, because, see, last week when I was on the radio, I was so busy laughing because we were talking about why people cheat. And, see, and going from why people cheat to something as serious, this is no laughing matter. Because,
right.
like I said, this is something that people are just holding on to, and they don't know what to do with that type of stuff. So let's transition a little bit over into, and then I'm going to check my emails. I don't see any callers or anything like that. But, you know, we talked a little bit about sex and being assaulted on a college campus. And I'm looking at something right now, and they're talking about, because we just had one of the universities where a person got arrested because he knew of something that was going on. And here's what I'm looking at. It says Baylor Regents found alleged sexual assault by football players horrifying. Officials shed light outside investigation into sexual assaults by football players that led to the departure of the team coach and the university president. Now, this has also resurfaced itself. And it says sexual violence scandals at Baylor University that cost a celebrated football coach his job involved 17 women who reported sexual or domestic assault involving 19 players, including 4 alleged gang rapes since 2011.
Wow.
That right there is a lot of lives of individuals that will probably be dealing with PTSD, depression, anxiety, relationship issues. And, I mean, this is just one of the few. Because, like I said, it is getting exposed, but yet very few people are talking about it. Very few. So I even commend you for even wanting to be a guest with me to even discuss this topic. Because a lot of people are afraid. They're like, yeah, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to talk about that. But if nobody talks about it, won't nobody do anything about it? Now, let's talk a little bit about sexual assault in the workplace. What has been your experience in regards to that?
That's a very specific one. And it's very interesting. You know, with any sexual assault or rape, there's a power dynamic. You know, we spoke of the parent-child power dynamic that was very specific to incest. And as far as in the workplace, there's sort of a, I'm going to say a rank structure because I'm used to dealing with military. But in any firm or foundation or business, there's a rank of, you know, this person is above this person, this person is above this person. And your job is your livelihood. So if they assault you and they say, if you tell, I'm going to fire you, well, now you have no way to support yourself. It's a pretty big threat. So it's another very specific power dynamic that happens.
And, you know, it's interesting because we just had a, I want to say in journalism, I forgot which TV network it was. I don't think it was ABC. I think it was NBC. But one of them where the young lady had exposed one of the owners of the television station in regards to sexual harassment and sexual assaults and things of that nature. But sexual violence is one of the most underreported crimes in our society. And that's because of what you just said. They don't want to talk about it, especially in the workplace. But yet, nearly 1 in 5 have been raped in their lifetime, while 1 in 71 men have been raped in their lifetime just in the workplace. Now, there is a connection to the workplace in regards to the United States Department of Justice estimate that 8% of rapes occur physically while they're working. So here you are going to work every day, and you're being bullied, sexually harassed, and in some cases, sexually assaulted by your boss, the person that's basically giving you your paycheck. And even stalking in the workplace is another issue that's happening. And it has a great impact in regards on a person's level of functioning, in regards to how you, you know, handle your day-to-day operations, because even though we go to work to earn a living, a healthy workplace fosters what we know as social, economic, professional growth and opportunities, but we don't go to work to be sexually assaulted. And it crosses, again, all social economic lines and various, whether it's, you know, oppression such as racism, sexism, classism, things of that nature. When we start talking about sex in the workplace, that's scary. And I want to say, and some people may say, you know, we got to know our rights. We got to know if we're feeling sexually harassed. You know, there are things that we can do. But I want to share this in regards to what I do to make a difference. I work with individuals, especially children, that have deviant sexual behaviors. Because if you don't catch and control those impulses, those are the individuals that are going out in the workplace and abusing their power and things of that nature, because they don't realize in some cases that it's wrong, and in some cases things may have happened to them. So I work with perpetrators as well as victims, because I do my best to stop it, to stop that perpetrator. And I let them know I ain't scared of the Nazi, so you can be looking at me all you want. You better get up out of here. Because I've been to beat the hell out of them in my office. They come messing at me like that. You know, some of my clients laugh because I have people sometimes calling me, breathing heavily on the phone, or, you know, telling me because they got sex addictions and things of that nature. But by that same token, somebody got to do this work. Now,
right.
We only have 13 minutes left. Let's talk about sex in the military, because this has been another big issue. We've already had the where the pictures were, you know, being distributed, things of that nature. Let's talk about that.
Oh,
okay.
This is a very, yeah, it's a very big ball of wax.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we start?
We go start where it gets good, and we go try to get them as much information. And
okay.
So we go there.
So a big part of this is the military subculture, the military ethos. It is a male-dominated population. It is sort of an artificial situation. War brings out the worst in people. These people are trained for war. So in a sense, they are sometimes trained to what we call depersonalize, meaning not seeing the enemy as a human being, but seeing the enemy as an enemy. That can affect how you see people in general. And because it is a male-dominated situation, we also get what's called groupthink, which is kind of the more people in on it, the less offensive it becomes, the less likely someone is to stand up against it. So that's something that's very specific to this situation that you're talking about with the pictures. it's also very difficult because there is a very strict rank structure in the military. And while there are rules against what's called fraternization, meaning someone who is an authority figure cannot date or be intimate with someone who is not an authority, that doesn't mean there aren't people there that exploit it. And the military will attract specific types of people. There are great people in the military. I work with them. I adore them. But there are also bad people that go to the military because they have killing impulses or exploitative impulses that are fed through war or whatever situation they anticipate being in. So it's a little more complicated than just a standard workplace. There's also, again, that rank structure. It's intense. You can't just quit the military. It's like signing up for a job for 5 years and not having an out. And so then when you're exploited, what do? If you go to the authorities, you're still in the military. Then you're known as someone who makes trouble or possibly, you know, goes against your brothers, whatever the case may be. So then the reputation follows you around and you're still stuck in that situation. With a civilian job, you can move jobs. You can't do that in the military. There are also instances where the person who reports it is inadvertently punished. They may be removed from their unit and put to death duty, which is really reserved for
Troublemakers, people that are being punished, people who are injured. So it's kind of a shameful place to be put. So it's a really complicated sort of cocktail for sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to read some information, and it comes from Stars and Stripes, and it's happened in Italy. And there was a woman, she tells her story. She says she never touched alcohol in college, figuring it would prevent her from being sexually victimized. But it says drinking with her buddies in the Army, she thought it was safe. So she thought. Until there was an individual who was, well, you know what? I don't even want to blame it on the devil, but right now everything, all my electronics just got stuck. So basically, she had a drink with a few of her military buddies. And as she was drinking with her military buddies, one of them, she got in the car, and they decided to sexually assault her. She tells her story in this journal in regards of what happened to her. And they basically, what they've done is they've set up a form for people to go if they've been sexually assaulted, because a lot of times, like you said, people don't believe them. People will say, you know, or they get shamed, or it's like, how dare you tell on your brothers? Like you said, it's like not only just being in the military, they have this unity together. So if you are active duty military or retired military and things have happened to you, there is help out there. It don't have to be as taboo as it was before, because I know of individuals that have been sexually assaulted and how it affects them and just the trauma. So I know we're running out of time. I should have made this a whole 90-minute show then, like I did the other one. But I want to talk about, I want to talk about what they have. It's called the freeze response. And this is how a warrior can handle the trauma of sexual assault. Now, with the freeze response, they have a response that they came up with, and one of the things that they talk about this is, it says many survivors know that being sexually assaulted is not their fault. Now, it says that they are one, and they have basically came together with a way that they can do things, and what they've done is they've joined together to try to help individuals they fought, and they got survivors working with survivors. So it shouldn't. It says, this person says, I couldn't take off the shame I felt no matter how hard I tried to forget what happened. And the more I tried to block my memories, the more anxious and confused I became. I became a space cadet, hardly feeling at all. It was how I protected myself. This way, I couldn't feel the sense of loss and betrayal. I couldn't feel the shame of still thinking that it was all my fault. Now, when we start talking about when individuals feel that way, I remember, and I always talk about my marriages, but a guy I knew, I think that his relationship with his wife could have probably lasted a lot longer than what it did. But when you're young and your significant other come to you and they've been raped, and as a man, I find that it's hard for a man to process when his wife has been raped by another person, whether it is at work, out at leaving her job, in the military, or even just at the grocery store. Have you ever worked with family members that are trying to help their family member that have been sexually assaulted?
Yes, I have. And it's really interesting, because when you say, oh, they don't know how to handle it, I don't find a lot of blaming the person who was raped. What I find gets in the way is, particularly if it's a significant other, I should have protected you.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really, really hard to process when you're in a relationship. You know, and we're taught from a very young age that when you're in a relationship, it's a give and take, and part of your job is to protect your significant other. And it is. But you can't be in every situation. And so that's probably the biggest symptom I see in the significant others is, I should have protected her. I should have protected him, rather than blaming them, which is what you would think would happen. It's hard to process when someone you care about has been violated in such an intense way.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And that is true, because sometimes I've seen with young couples, they find it hard because they deal with their own guilt of not being there, and they don't know how to handle that in a relationship because mm-hmm. it does become an issue. So one of the things is when someone, as we know, has been raped or sexually assaulted, they obviously need a great deal of support from the people around them, as well from people like counselors, police, doctors, and things of that nature. And many people simply don't know how to help somebody through the trauma of rape or sexual assault. So they also become frustrated and bewildered and feel that they are in some way failing the person that they care about. And these things
yeah.
can sometimes be transmitted to that person, making it harder for them to cope with their experience and often leaving them an even more feeling of guilt and confusion, because the person that they left was like, well, they don't know what to say. It's like, if you don't have nothing good to say, don't say nothing at all. But they'll be like, well, what was you there in the first place? Why was you drinking? Or why did you
Right.
How would you not? So because they don't know what to do. But every person responds differently to abuse. And although there are certain feelings that are common, such as fear, distress, humiliation, anger, confusion, numbness, and guilt, the feelings a person may have vary from week to week, from day to day, and even minute to minute. And what is important is that someone who has been attacked is allowed to experience their feelings without fear of them being invalidated or dismissed. It is also important that they feel that they have people who will allow them to talk and try to understand their needs rather than assuming that others know what's best for them by telling them to get over it. I always tell people in therapy, you don't get over it, you get through it. So
yeah.
we have some do's and don'ts. So I'm going to try to make it quick, and then I'm going to let you kind of share some other things. But first of all, don't criticize. Don't criticize a survivor of abuse for being where they were at the time, or for not resisting more, or screaming, or not talking about it earlier, or in regards to with anyone else, because anybody, anywhere can be a victim of abuse regardless of who they are. And do understand. And when I say do understand, that means listen and try to understand why they were unable to prevent it from happening. This may have been frozen by fear, or have been unsuspecting and trusting, or they may have been threatened or physically attacked and may have realistically feared worse would happen if they would have resisted. You wouldn't expect somebody who has been mugged to have been able to prevent it. And now I could tell a story about that, but I don't have time, because I remember when I was in school, somebody came up to me. It was a college rapist or somebody, and I was in the parking lot by myself, and somebody was following me. I turned around and cussed him out. What the hell you following me for? I got AIDS, knowing I didn't have AIDS. But I scared that man so bad. He said, ma'am, I just want to make sure you mention your car, okay? I'm thinking, I wish a mother sucker would mess with me, you know? So I understand. I get it. I know I'm not Superwoman, but some of these days I'd be like, you'll catch one. You don't leave me alone. So do listen. Okay. Do listen to their response, meaning listen to their reasons, and just listen. Do help distinguish between if only and guilt, and don't oversimplify, but do reassure them that you are there. So, and you get some help. Go to therapy with them. Go seek a counselor. Now, we have 90 minutes. So, Catherine, tell them where you are in Texas for those individuals that may need your help in Texas.
I'm in Arlington, Texas. My website is www.catherinemcounseling.com. And, you know, even if you're not in Texas, if you need to reach out and need to be pointed in the right direction, I'm happy to help you with that, too. So,
thank you. I appreciate you being a guest with me today. And, again, my name is Jeanette Abney. I am the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, located in Orange County in the city of Fullerton, Garden Grove, and Huntington Beach. I am also the owner of J.A. Precious, Inc., located in Oceanside, California. And I also work in an office in Marietta with my co-therapist, Dr. Lisa Romaine, who's not on the air with us today. So there are several ways you can reach me. You can Google my name, or you can find me on Psychology Today. And hopefully I can guide you in the right place. Next week, we'll be talking about financial literacy. So if you have not filed your taxes, please do so, and make sure you spend your tax money appropriately, or either by investing or saving your money. So we're going to be giving tips in regards to how to handle things financially. Till then, see you next week at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you. I appreciate it. When is this going to be out?
Now. Hang up. I'm going to call you.
Oh, it went live?
I'm going to call you back.
Okay.
I'm going to call you back.
No worries. Bye.